I'm Preeti Chibber.
And I'm Jen Northington.
And this is Tar, Valin, or Bust, a Wheel of Time podcast.
There are more reasons to hate the Shanshan than I can count.
Correct.
Sorry, not sorry.
It's true. So we are rereading the books in honor of the TV show adaptation's release. We are talking about our favorite and not so favorite moments and digging into all things Wheel of Time. And today we are continuing Knife of Dreams. Knife of Dreams or the Knife of Dreams?
I think it's Knife of Dreams. Is there an article? Dreams.
No,
Knife it's Knife. There's no article.
Knife of Dreams with chapters 10 through 15. I can't remember if we had the whole conversation on, like, online or offline about the articles.
It was, I believe it was online. I believe it was, because they're not consistent.
They're not consistent.
So it's very confusing.
Before we dig into chapters 10 through 15, very quick housekeeping. The next, including this episode, the next one and the one after that, we are pre-recording because I am going on vacation.
For two weeks
in April to Japan. And so I will not be bringing the Wheel of Time with me or any recording instruments whatsoever or my computer.
Yes. Traveling without your computer. I love this for you.
Not doing it.
Good for you. Fully disconnect.
So where we usually sometimes will be like, someone tell us if we're wrong. And then the next time we'll be like, we were wrong. That might not happen until the end of whatever episode happens at the end of April when we're like, we were wrong 7 times.
Here's the 14 things Jen said that were incorrect.
Oh my goodness. It's fine. Everything's fine.
Everything's fine. Everything's fine.
Speaking of everything's fine.
Oh my gosh.
Because that's one of my notes. So chapter 10.
Oh my God.
Or the first line is, the following day brought a respite, or so it seemed. And my note here is, not for Matt Calvin.
Oh, boy.
I think I just have to, like, split my brain in half like Matt's doing and compartmentalize some of the Shanshan feelings, angry Shanshan feelings that I have. Because otherwise I'm not going to get through this.
I was just going to say, I mean, we sort of have to take it as a given.
Yes.
That, like, we're uncomfortable. He doesn't appear to be doing it in a skillful way, at least as far as we are concerned as readers. Like, there should be tension between what Matt is trying to do and what Perrin is trying to do and what we know of the Shanshan and the last battle. Like, that is a tense allying with your enemy situation, but the way Jordan is handling it is not working for us.
No, because it's where is the tension of that point?
Right.
He tries, sort of.
There's a few places.
Yeah. There's a few places in the section where he tries a little bit, which actually makes the failure seem even bigger. Yeah. But okay, so
with that as a given.
With that as a given. The next day they're riding. Tuan is wearing a blue silk riding dress, which Matt has noticed, apparently. There's a lot of, like, and all seemed right with the world. Well, there were bad moments, but only moments. And it had the biggest, like, Wanda vision energy where she's like, I'm fine. That is what Matt was giving to me here. Like, it's fine.
So Tuan is, you know, making casual, like, comments about Matt and his raven superstitions. And she's like, oh, do you even believe this, like, thing about old Hob and snakes and foxes? And Matt's like, that's stressful that
it's
you bring
pointed
up all those three things. Can't answer that question.
How do I walk around? Also, can we only call the Dark One Old Hob from now?
I know. Old Hob. That's great.
Hey, it's Old Hob.
It's Old Hob.
Hey.
It's like a Cheers episode where we cut Norm.
It's Old Hob.
Old Hob. At the Dark Friend Social, they're all just waiting for him to walk in.
It's happy hour. You've had a hard day at the, like, Dark One's, like,
HQ
office. Yeah, the headquarters. It's much, much needed releasing of tension. Sorry. Today's going to be an episode, apparently.
It's going to be something. So, yeah, I just took a certification test that I have no idea how I did, and it's going to take me 5 days to find out. So my brain is a mess. Anyway, Matt is basically just thinking about like how complicated the situation with Tulon is.
But just from an emotional place, yes. not from yes. anything
not
else.
From
and
anything
so he's
else.
Like, he's like trying to flirt with her and he's like finding her. It would be sweet outside of the context.
Right.
But he's like juggling for her. He's telling her jokes. He feels really good when she laughs and so on and so forth. He's like it's hard because they're talking about like training horses.
Yeah.
And all I could think of, like, all we've been told is how she trains Domine. And so she's actually, is she talking about human beings?
Right.
That sucks.
Right.
And there's this note where he sort of references the night before where all that awfulness happened. And he thinks, like, it may as well have been a dream. And I was like, that seems healthy. Sure.
Everything is fine. GIF.
Yeah. And so it's just a lot of like, he's like trying to put the stuff a Guianine told him into, like, influence the way he's acting, etc. And then we get actually some really great horror.
Yeah, they come upon a village, but everybody's behaving really oddly. Like, nobody's acknowledging the traveling circus. Like, there's a peddler coming and like nobody's paying attention to the peddler. And they don't go past the village. Luca finds a meadow to like pull off in. But Matt notices that the road goes from unpaved to paved very suddenly, and the peddler is like heading towards the village, and he's like, no.
It's great, actually, because it's like slowly he's like noticing it. And obviously, we're like, it's dead people.
Yeah.
But he's like,
obviously, it's dead people.
Obviously. But the slow build of Matt sort of like picking up on these little, after it's like the juxtaposition of the like happiness and flirtiness and like fun he's having. And then this slow sort of build of like, there's something off and wrong here, that when he screams, like the peddler's about to like get off, like stop. And he's like, just keep, like Matt screams at him to keep going. And all of a sudden, like, everything falls apart and it's terrifying. The like, keep going, they're dead, keep going was so good.
Yeah, it's intense. And so, yeah, so all of the animals freak out. Like, the peddler is like sinking into the ground, and Matt is just like, I don't have an arrow to give him a quick death with. So they watch this guy
It's
just like
awful.
it's awful. It's very horror. It's very horror.
Because
Robert Jordan
he's like
returning.
Screaming, help me, and no one can. And
right.
Matt is like,
I had an issue with that. I'm like, there's literally nobody else in this entire, like 400 people who have like
this
a
is
bow
like sort
and
of,
arrow.
I
Like,
know.
come on.
It's sort of standard. I was imagining it as like everyone's panicking and freaking
Yeah,
out, and
that's
not
fair.
Matt is hearing it, but I don't know if everybody's hearing it, you know, like Matt is paying attention.
Right.
Because he has a moment where he like steps towards the guy and Tuan is like, what do you think you can do? And he says nothing, which is like so heartbreaking. Because then he has to watch this person and he's like, are they gonna die? Like, what's gonna happen when they get pulled into the ground?
Yeah.
Like, it's really intense and really awful.
Yeah.
But like in the best way, like in the best Robert Jordan kind of way.
In the good writing way. Yeah. And so then the village disappears and there's another meadow and everybody is like, we need to get the hell out of here.
And that's like, this isn't going to last. Everything's going to fall apart right now. This whole, no one's going to want to stay.
Right. And then Luca, like, to the rescue? What?
But it worked so well because we often see Luca has been in charge of this thing for a long time.
14 books.
14 books. But we often see him, you know, just kind of like irritating Matt or like irritating Nynaeve. And this is where you see like, oh no, he's a showman. Like, he really knows how to like captivate and keep his audience and sway them. And you can see why he is in the position that he is in. And you always like to be like, oh, now that character actually has
competence.
Competency.
Exhibits of competence. Give me
Matt's
more.
Like, no way this is going to work. No way.
But yeah, he talks everybody around like fleeing and continuing. They decide they're going to continue on to Lugard on the promise of money, basically. So, and then Tuan is like, you will take me to these amazing cities that Luca is describing, says to Matt.
Well, she does ask. She says, I should like to see these cities. Will you show them to me?
She does ask. That's true.
And he's like, maybe. Yeah. Then I'll send you back to Ibu Dar. And she's like, maybe.
Will you?
Will you, though? Mm-hmm. And then Tom and Matt have a little bit of a bet. Mm-hmm. And it's some much needed, like, let's bring it back up. The energy back up a little bit because Tom's like, oh, this is gonna work. I know showman, this is gonna work. And Matt's like, no, it's not. And then it does.
And then it does. Let's see.
So the Aes Sedai, he's talking about the Aes Sedai,
mm-hmm.
and how they're like staring at, well, they went and they like looked around the meadow and like did some stuff or whatever. But then there's this moment where they're like studying Tuan from afar, mm-hmm. and Matt, it's like they agreed not to bother her. Were they bound from that? Were they bound by that? They always found ways around the oath that said they weren't allowed to lie.
Mm-hmm.
So Tuan would not get to see Camelin, or perhaps not Lugar. Chances were there would be Aes Sedai in both cities. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What is happening here? They'll take her to Tar Valon before she could play. Good.
Right.
Yes. Do want. sorry.
That's all right. You're not wrong. Okay, so they're like, okay, well, we have to move on. We cannot stay here because everybody is fucking terrified. And this is where the, like, peddler got eaten by the ground. So they all, like, have to... It's very, like, platform in 9 3/4, not to reference, but, like, I can't help it. It's just felt very, like, you have to run straight past this one spot. Or, like, the floor is lava when we were kids.
Yeah.
It's very floor is lava.
Just go.
And there's
not that they know that anything will happen, but there is that level of
fear. I would be like, oh, jumping 100%. Over that shit.
I'd be like,
personally.
Is there a way we can literally go around, even if it adds like 3 hours on?
Touch that ground.
There is this, Tom has this wonderfully ominous line where he wins the bet, Matt gives him the coin. And Tom goes, I think I'll keep this as a memento to remind me that even the luckiest man in the world can lose. And you're like, bro, why are you asking for this?
Right.
Do not speak that into the atmosphere. Right.
You're tempting the thing from on top the high. Like, don't do it. Yeah. All right. Let's see. So everybody's very, like, when they finally make camp again, everybody's very shook for obvious reasons.
Yeah. There's no one wants to sleep. Matt tries to go see, like, place stones at Tuan, and they're like, no, this is a night for prayer. Right. We saw some really fucked up stuff today.
Yeah.
And so he's like, okay, I guess I'll drink in my tent.
Right. And he gets joined by various people coming in and out, and sort of does his, like, taking care of everyone.
Yeah,
thing.
It's cute.
Like, it's very reluctantly taking care of everyone. And Aegeanine and Domin are, like, making nice with Julin and Amethera, which is, like, a weird dynamic. But, like, it shows, I think it's there to show that Aegeanine is rejecting the Shanchen.
Yes.
Which is great.
It is great. And it's great in this. It's not seen as, like, Robert Jordan doesn't paint it as a negative, as I think he could have, given the way he's been writing the Sanshan and the way I think he wants us to be. He wants to sort of fast forward to accepting them as this, like, you know, whatever. But he is like, it's never like, I'm rejecting the Sanshan. The way he does it is like, Aegeanine basically is like telling Amethera that she doesn't need, you have to look everyone in the eyes.
Right.
Like, because she comes in and Amethera immediately starts to, like, duck her head. And she says, you look me in the eyes, you look everyone in the eyes. And Julian's like, that's new.
Mm-hmm.
That's different.
Yeah.
And Domin just is like, all things change.
Right.
It's great.
It's
Don't
great.
Worry.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's painted as, like, they are trying to, like, she's just moving forward.
Yes. Yeah. And it's not, like, instantly all is forgiven. There's work to be done. And mm-hmm. they're, like, we're seeing them start to do that. So, yeah. So they go off. It starts raining. Oh, let's see. Noel comes in. And Ulver.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah.
Yes, because Ulver has to drop some important information in a little while.
Right. This is the whole thing. But this whole scene is so bananas.
Well, this is the whole, like, Jordan's like, oh, I'm on book, whatever book we're on, 11.
Yeah.
And I need shit to start happening. So Tom comes in and starts mm-hmm. reading that letter from Moiraine again, mm-hmm. which he's had now for
well, I don't even know
books many and books. And Matt finally is like, okay, what's the deal? What's the deal with that letter? And Tom goes, oh, it's actually about you too.
Right.
Moiraine wrote it just before, you know, everything.
Yeah.
And then we get to finally read the letter.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. It's felt very like the meaning of The Forsaken, where it's like, you know, that secret thing that's been secret for a million yeah. years? Not here. A secret anymore. Here, you just have it. Just have it. And we find out that like Matt could have known it any time. And the reason Tom kept taking it out in his presence was he was trying to get Matt to ask about it.
I actually love it. I love that so much. Because it's so funny. It's like, you could have known this.
Yeah.
8,000 pages ago.
Right.
You had
exactly.
just thought to ask.
Oh, no. But so he's like reading this letter, which is like, I still don't understand this Moiraine Tom. Like, there's a backstory here that we're just not getting. Like,
yeah.
When did they ever like interact in a way that they have
my dearest for each Tom.
Exactly. Exactly. But Moiraine is basically like, everybody's going to believe I'm dead, but I'm not. Mm-hmm. And if you want to rescue me, for reasons that we don't understand, like that you are so attached to me that you want to come risk death to rescue me, it's you and Matt and one other person. I don't know who the third person is. And like, you can't do it any other way. And even if you come the right way, you might still die.
Yeah. But
see you soon. LOL. Like, bye.
It's actually really great because I didn't remember any of this. And
remember
so.
Remember any of what?
Huh?
Remember any of what?
The letter. I didn't remember what
well,
was in the letter.
Why would you? Oh, I see. From previous reading.
Yeah, like, from previous reading.
This wasn't in the books yet. It was
No. From this is a reread project, Jen.
I don't remember anything anymore. So who knows what is happening?
But I didn't remember any of this.
No,
so
I didn't
I was
either.
Like the whole time, I was like, if this is just a love letter, I'm going to lose my mind. So I really actually appreciate now all of the buildup to this and to let it be that, because it's like, this is the most perfect way for, like, you know, Matt is sitting there like, are you fucking kidding
right.
me?
Right. I don't want to go back to the eel fin and like, the ale fin. Like,
I don't want to do it, but yeah. Also, I could have known this a while ago. Like, it's just right. The most ridiculous, like, why did I have to ask? Like, what the hell?
Yeah. Oh, man.
But so Moiraine. Mm-hmm. Possibly alive. Yep. I know we have been like, we don't know. Is she right. dead? I still who knows?
Right.
But odds are alive, maybe.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, for sure.
But then this is where it's like Oliver just has all the information.
Yes. He's like, oh, well, we know that it's the Tower of Genji. Like Brigitte told me that. And they're all like, okay, what?
Oh man.
And then Nold is like, oh, it's somewhere along the Shadow Coast. And Matt's like, we don't, that would take forever to find it.
Mm-hmm.
And the letter says that Matt knows how, but he's like, well, I don't know what the Tower of Gen, I've never heard of it. And then Nold describes it. He's like, you'd remember if you'd seen it. After all, this is what it looks like.
It's
and that's
great.
Like, oh fuck, I have seen that tower. God damn it.
He's like, son of a bitch.
Son of a bitch.
Because he has, and then he's like Ulver also is like, oh, this is also how you get a door open.
Right, you draw the sign. Here's all the information that you need.
And then we sort of get like a moment because Matt hears this and he immediately starts like getting nauseous. Mm-hmm. And Tom's like, they're still talking, but Tom's like, whoa, you look real bad, dude. What's up? And we get this sort of reminder that Matt has a lot of memories missing from his own life.
Mm-hmm.
But one he does remember is seeing the tower while he was on, like, after Shadar Logoth.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, I do know where it is. But then he has to tell them everything.
Right. I was not prepared for that. He was like, oh, well, they are looking at me like I'm weird. So I guess I have to tell them literally everything.
Literally
like,
everything.
What?
And it's like he's been keeping these secrets yeah. for, again,
so
books
many
and books and books and books and books. And he just vomits all, mm-hmm. like all of it out at Tom, Noel, and Oliver. And which, Oliver!
I was just going to say, wild. Like, you send the child out for the story of how you got hung.
Right?
Like, what?
Oliver did not need to hear any of this. Do we trust Oliver to keep his mouth shut?
Well,
also,
it's not even about.
Baby.
I mean, you're right. Oliver is not is just a plot device. He's not actually a person or a character, so it's fine. And then he's like, "Yeah, you can't tell anybody about any of this," and they're all like, "Okay." So yeah, and then Noel is like, "Well, I'm definitely coming too."
Yeah, he's like, "I want to come. I'm the third guy," and Matt's like, "But why don't you just do it?"
Right.
And they're
right.
like, "Because it won't succeed if you don't come, dude." Mm-hmm. And he's like, ugh, fine.
I almost picked this as the quote, heroes got patted on the head and pushed out of the way until the next time a hero was needed. If they survived being a hero in the first place.
I love
I was like,
that.
That's such a good line.
It's so good.
It's such a good line.
It's so good.
Yep.
Ugh. This is like the stuff I love about Matt.
Yeah.
So it's like nice to be after that awfulness last chapter to be able to come back to this and like really dig into the like reluctant hero and the recognition that he does have a responsibility as much as he hates it to just say yes and do it is
and
so
as soon
wonderful.
As he does that, the dice stop.
It's the last set of dice
the
had
last
stopped.
set of dice.
Then chapter 11, we got more Tuon stuff. They're
I honestly
still
highlighted
writing.
Very little about this chapter. They,
I mean,
oh, right, they get to a new village, and
yes.
Luca's like, definitely don't tell anybody what you saw.
It's
And they're
like,
all
duh.
Oh, shit.
We never want to talk about it ever again. Can we all just pretend
I
it
don't
didn't
want
happen?
I don't want it to happen. And then Seleucia comes and summons Matt to Tuon. She's like, she's waiting.
There is, this did make me laugh, because Matt's like, I'm going to take my time. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to jump and just do it. He's, but when he finally gets ready and walks by her and goes, well, what are you waiting for? And she literally hisses on him.
Yeah.
I was dying. That made me laugh really hard. Not the his line, but the fact that she literally hissed. Like she purely hissed like a cat.
It's a good moment. It's a
you
good
make
moment.
me so angry.
So yeah, so and then Tuon is like, you're gonna take me to a tavern, and not just a tavern, you're gonna take me to a hell. Like, you're gonna take me to the diviest lowlife
worst.
dive you can find.
And it seems that she's gotten this notion in conversation with Satel for whatever reason. And Matt's like, that's not a good idea.
No.
Can we not?
Yeah. Yep. And then she's like, well, you promised you would take me. And so he was like, well, I did not promise that I would take you to a hell. Like,
and
I
then they
never
have a
promised
fight
that. And they have a fight.
That's loud enough that Tom has to like overhears it outside and comes in and is like, so I heard some yelling.
I just came to report that there are Shanshin in the village from time to time, but not any soldiers. There are villagers coming and going. And Matt's like, well, great, we can't go into town. And Tuon's like, oh, LOL, like, no villagers have ever been allowed to look upon me, so it's fine.
And then Tom's like, I'm sure it's fine. And Matt's like, what the fuck, dude?
She wants to go to a hell. And Tom's like, well, actually, I do know somewhere I could take you. Okay.
And Matt's so angry.
So mad about it. It's so mad.
But he does try to like test with Tom. He's like, so should I bring the others? And Tom's like, no, it'll be fine with just you.
We have a lot of knives between the two of us. Like, it's fine.
And Tuen can obviously like see that he's worried. And so she has this moment where she's like, seriously, it's going to be fine. Like, don't worry. It'll be fine. And he's like, ugh, okay.
Famous last
I
words.
guess. Yeah, and then they go into the town. Like, there's a slight moment with Luca that I don't think really matters.
No.
Then there's this moment. I like also that we get, I have missed Tom, like, getting to see Tom. So we get to see this moment where they're passing guards and Tom plays his Tom role. It is, like, trying to get information by acting a certain way, given the circumstance he finds himself and taking advantage of that circumstance to find out more about, like, sort of the state of the town and the guy in charge and all of that and how he feels about the Sunshine. And what we learn is that that town, the guy in charge, is either under the Sunshine's thumb or mm-hmm. like believes in what they're saying. The guards don't have a problem with the Sunshine. Right. And this is one of those little moments where Jordan is like, yeah, I guess people would be still mad about this. And so Tom gets to say, it's so weird. Like he says, it's very strange. I found the same everywhere from Ibudar to here. These outlanders come, take charge, impose their laws, snatch up women who can channel. And if the nobles resent them, very few among the common people seem to, unless they've had a wife or relation collared. Very strange, and it bodes ill for getting them out again. So there's an at least acknowledgement of this, like, on the page.
Yeah.
That we haven't gotten, really,
yeah,
in a while.
I wonder if, I just had this thought, I wonder if one of the pieces of subtext here is that, like, the Aes Sedai have been so cloistered away from the population and so high-handed and like
mm-hmm.
not collaborative, shall we say, with everyone else.
Yeah.
That like there is like this ground level resentment and fear. And we know like the White Cloaks, you know, are a
right.
presence because of those same reasons, you know, or not for those same reasons, but like they take advantage of the distrust of Aes Sedai to push their agenda. And so probably we're seeing some of the fallout of the Aes Sedai policy over the last X hundred years. But again, like, I feel like he needed to do more work to like remind us of this or like to bring it up.
No, I agree. I don't think you're wrong. And I on either count, I think that subtext could very easily be deliberate because Jordan is super clear, mm-hmm. especially in the earlier books, about yeah. the sort of like mistrust mm-hmm. of Aes Sedai, and not just from like our main characters, but just society in general.
Right.
And obviously we know he is not, he is very much painting the Aes Sedai as like bureaucracy is problematic.
Right.
These like hierarchies and these organized mm-hmm. things are problematic because it is a dogma and, mm-hmm. you know, whatever, whatever. So I don't think you're wrong, but I also agree that it's not, he hasn't done enough.
Right. It needs on to be the textier page. Text.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
All right. So let's see.
But then Matt's reaction to what Tom says is to be like, how does Tuon feel about this?
Right, right. You're like, what the hell?
Oh my God. Learn so to look elsewhere.
They walk through the town. They see a lot of different things, including some hunters for the horn.
They are, by the way, he is being so aggressive with the horn stuff because I think it's another thing that he's like, don't forget.
Right.
I know I haven't mentioned this in a while, but he brought it up in the last section.
You're right.
This section, it comes up with Perrin.
Yeah.
I'm like, you are reminding us because you realized it's been too long.
Yeah. Who even has the horn now? Did Padfain steal it back?
I thought
Tar-Valin, or is it still in the tower?
I thought the tower had it.
Yeah.
Because Padfain Matt blew
got
it.
His dagger back.
Huh?
Padfain got his dagger back, and the dagger had been with the horn.
But I don't think he has the horn.
But I don't think he has the horn.
I think it was just the dagger.
Yeah.
We'll find out in...
Right.
Well, we'll find out sooner than 3 weeks.
Yeah.
But we'll tell you if we were wrong at the end of April. Yeah.
So, yeah, they finally get to the White Ring, which is a euphemism for a garter. And Matt's like, ugh. And Tuon is, like, aggressively wanting to see Matt in a knife fight. Which
I
is...
mean, fair. He looks really cool when he does it. Like, I get it, girl.
All right. So they go into the White Ring, and it's like, it's not a total dive. It like
no.
Tom has like picked the and Matt's like, oh, is Tuon gonna like fall for this? And she does.
Yeah. Because again, Matt bets Tom that Tuon's mm-hmm. gonna see right through this because she's my magic, like magical girl.
Right.
And Tom's like, no, she's not.
Yeah, yeah. And it's basically a place where merchants and outlanders and like local folks meet up to start their business negotiations. Mm-hmm. So it's gambling and, you know, whatever. So they get a table.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and they've got people with them, don't they?
No, it's
no,
just
you're right. It is
not
just
yet.
Matt and Tom and Tuan.
It's
You're
Matt,
right. You're
Tom,
right.
Tuan,
And
and
Salusia.
Salusia.
Yes.
And yeah, she's like, I want to try ale.
Right. So they get ale and wine. And he's like trying to tell them what to say and not to say because they're being very Shanshan. And he's like, ooh, keep it on the DL.
But she's like, you have to teach me about your customs. And he's like, I'll teach you what I can. And it's hard because there are moments that he writes that, again, outside of the context of who Tuan is, like, I really like and I enjoy seeing the two of them interact. And then, of course, because it's Jordan, he brings in the like humiliation Matt suffered under Tylan as
Yes,
a
this
joke and
reference
a
to pink
barb.
ribbons.
Yeah. In a way that like sucked the fun out of this moment because it's treated so lightheartedly when it was just awful, awful thing to have to read. But there are moments and there are interactions that Tuan and Matt have that I actually really like. And I think they're fun characters to see bounce off of each other in terms of like who Tuan is aside from being this like Sunshine High Lady, just her like feistiness and her commitment to like being tough and like her understanding is like, I will be fine. I will do whatever I want. I'll be fine in this like very funny way.
Yeah, so he tells her, you know, the things that he knows about different courts and customs and palaces. She's asking all these questions, and he like doesn't feel like he's doing that good of a job, but she's like, "Oh, so you have traveled widely. Like you know some stuff. You're not nobly born, but like you're all right."
And he's like, you're right, I'm not nobly born.
And so then she's like, go gamble. I want to see you go gamble. She's very like, go putting him through his paces, it feels like, show yourself off unto me.
It's a little bit like I hear all these great things about you and I don't get to experience them, so I want to see it.
I don't know. I feel like she's always so condescending. It doesn't help that she's calling him toy every sentence.
That to
So.
me, now that he calls her precious, is less grating. It's still irritating, but it's not as grating as it was when, because you know that she's as, like, I don't think she likes being called precious any more than he
No,
likes
he's
being
at
called
least getting a
toy.
little back.
So he's like giving it back. So I'm like, whatever.
Okay, fair enough. So this merchant and these other men are gambling, and the merchant is like, seems visibly drunk and is like, come on, the more the merrier. Like, come on in. But this one guy gets like really weird and
Yeah.
takes off.
He like the second Matt comes over, he's like, I'm done. I'm
I'm
out.
out.
And they're like, okay, weirdo.
And Matt's just like, huh, okay. And he's noticing things about like the merchant is probably not as drunk as she
Yeah.
seems, and you know, he's like trying very deliberately to like not win too
Well,
much.
he wins like 14 times in a row or something. And that's the moment he realizes like the merchant, this woman, like her mask slips and he sees the shrewdness in her eyes and is like, oh shit. So he tries to be like, I'm gonna buy everyone a drink and this is my last roll. I'm not doing it again. And of course he's like, I have to lose this one because the luckier thing here would be to lose because otherwise someone's gonna try to murder me for cheating.
And so he does. They like lose everything except for like a little bit. It's fine.
Yeah, and so Tuan, he explains to Tuan everything. Basically, like, we're seeing him actually get outside of himself and share his observational sort of tactics with someone else in a way that he has not been doing. And so I think this is just a scene of Robert Jordan being like, they're becoming partners.
Because she's like, oh, interesting. Like, you are not an idiot. Like,
Yeah.
you can do some stuff. And then she's like, well, I have to go to the necessary. And I was so convinced she was like running away.
I'd same,
I was like,
but
huh.
she really does just like go to the bathroom,
She
I
really does just go to the bathroom.
think.
And I guess it's just an excuse for Tom and Matt to be like, there's trouble.
Yeah, so there was like a murder,
Definitely the golem is following them still.
yes, which Matt's like, God damn it, that golem, get away from me.
And there's a
And
Shanshan army on the border of Murrindi, and I was like, is that Perrin?
maybe.
Like, I don't
I don't remember where anything is. And now that I'm on my phone, I can't flip back to the map. So I just don't.
Okay.
And they're talking about they like every time you pass through, anyone who passes through has to drink the fork root tea.
Right. That's right.
Because gross.
Oh,
but this
and
is where,
and they're looking for
they're
looking for someone with Tuan's description, not to rescue her,
but to kill her,
but to arrest and kill her.
Because this is, of course, Surat's plan, given from under the direction of one of the Forsaken that I don't remember which one.
Is that right? This is Surat's plan,
isn't it? Remember the like Forsaken came. It was Surat, right? This Forsaken came and like in her bedroom, and there was some kind of bear creature or something. And the Forsaken is like, everyone's dead in wherever. And Surat's like, okay. And she's like, you could be Empress if they never find Tuan.
Right.
So I was assuming this is Surat's plan.
I got you. I didn't put all that together. So I think you must be right. But I imposter plan was already in place because when they originally kidnapped Tuan and everybody was freaking out, there was the rumor about the woman matching Tuan's description who had been like extorting gold necklaces from merchants.
Yeah, but I think this is now taking advantage of that and putting orders out.
I see.
Right? Because Surat is in a position to do that.
Somebody started the rumors in the first place for reasons I still don't understand.
The Forsaken?
But like,
I don't know.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. This is what's happening.
Yeah, so Matt obviously now has to change plans because he can't send Tuan back into a place where they're gonna kill her,
right?
And Matt's like,
so
great.
Matt's like, all right, we have to leave the circus and we need more horses and we have to make sure we'll take Aludra with her, like, and the stuff. And Matt's like, don't worry, I'll win a lot of gold and we'll make it work.
We'll make it work. We'll just make He's not work. Worried.
It's fine.
then go ahead.
So then Tuan and Celicia got back from the bathroom. Matt's like, okay, we're going to go now. And she's like, but there hasn't even been a fight yet. And he's like, no, we have to go. And then we get this really intense, like, Perrin echo where he says he was going to do whatever was necessary to make sure she was not put in danger of being broken, whatever it took.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, all right. So I see what you're doing here.
Yeah.
Like, I hate it, but okay, fine.
It's fine.
So they go outside and Matt tells Tuan about this thing and she is like, oh, it's probably my ambitious sisters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's like, it's probably this, like, cause she doesn't know obviously
that
everyone's
everybody's dead. Right.
She's like, I'm sure I know what it is. And then Tuan's like, so what are you gonna, she has this weird moment with Seleucia where they do their signing at each other, and because Seleucia gets like, she like oversteps, and then they have a tearful sort of like, no, actually we're fine. And Matt's like, what just happened? But Tuan doesn't answer and is just like, so what are the plans, like, what are you gonna do? And he's like, well, obviously not Ibudar, but don't worry, I'm gonna figure out a way to get you back safely. And Tuan's like, so you, and but before she can finish her sentence, people come around the corner with swords.
Yep. So it's like, obviously, and I mean, I knew as soon as the guy left the table that it was Dark Friends who've been given Matt's description. And he's like, oh, shit, time to get the rest of the clan so we can, you know, kill this guy. So, 7 or 8 men with swords. And so he tries to protect Tuan and like we get an excellent fight sequence.
It's so good. Very There's good. So many good lines. I was like, oh, I've missed this. Like I've missed getting to read these moments because he's like, run Tuan, Tom, get her away. And then he just launches himself towards the guys with the swords. And it's like a really tight quarters. And so there are all these wonderful, like, his hands moved as fast as they ever had, short moves, almost delicate. Flamboyance would have killed him. Mm-hmm. And so we have, he's just so good at writing these like action fight scenes. Oh, it's like, and he thinks about the choreography in a really wonderful way. And then I'm like, Robert Jordan, did you act these out?
Do you know that what that comes to mind is the scene in Arrested Development with George Michael doing lightsaber moves in the garage?
Yes. Correct.
His sweet moves. Okay.
And then, Yes, then the silliness happens at the end of the fight.
Oh, God, right. There's one last one attacker, and it's a woman. She's got two swords or two daggers, or a double-edged dagger. That's what it is. And he's like, there's no way you're going to, like, do what everybody else has not managed to do. Like, I'll let you go.
He's like, run, yeah. And I won't hurt you.
And but so she comes at him. He slips on blood, and Tuan saves him. And
Tuan saves him in a spectacularly brutal manner.
Yeah, it's intense. It's intense.
Like, ooh. Mm-hmm. She, like, pulls the woman's, like, arm behind her back and then, like, punches her really hard in the throat.
Yeah. Yep.
And there is this, like, great moment where Matt, it's like, I told you to run, Matt said, not sure which of the two he was addressing. And Tuan's like, you let her kill you almost. Like, why? And he's like, I promised myself I'd never kill another woman. I just rolled my eyes.
Yeah. And he starts figuring out his wounds. And then Tom and Cilicia are farther back with a bunch of bodies near them. Tom is wounded.
What did this interaction? Was it because she did Cilicia like kill somebody?
I think she channeled.
Oh.
I think she could.
Oh.
Is what I think. Because Tom says, like, Cilicia doesn't have, you know, she has a gash on her arm.
Oh, I see, like, I see.
Tom
yeah.
doesn't
yeah.
seem like, Tom doesn't actually seem that injured. And Matt's like, well, Tuan wasn't part of it, so what happened there? And then Tom is like, sometimes I imagine I see things that can't be, but luckily I always forget them. And Cilicia's like, and what are you forgetting? And Tom's like, I don't remember. She's like, great. Good. I'm glad we understand each other. So I think Cilicia can channel.
I think you're right. That would make sense. Then Tuan is looking down at this girl and is like, well, we can't let her live.
Right.
And then she like stabs her in the chest.
Yes.
It's kind of awesome.
Yeah. And she's like, oh, she didn't deserve a merciful death, but you know, whatever.
Whatever. And then she goes, I won, by the way. And yeah. Matt's like, what? And she's like, you said my name before I used yours.
So I won.
I won. And I was like, okay.
All right.
I did like that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I know.
So then Matt IDs that the guy, one of the dead guys, is the merchant from the tavern, and everything's click. Like, it's not just bandits. They're like, you know, dark friends. And Matt's like, okay, plans have changed. We have to leave now. And Luca is going to want to get rid of us. We'll have all the horses we need. And nobody's gonna believe that like a respectable merchant attacked us. Like, we can't report these.
Yeah, because so. Tuan's like, well, you have to report it. It's the law. And he's like, oh, girl,
nope,
no, we're not doing that.
We're not doing that. Hate that for us.
And then that's unfortunately the last we see of Matt.
Yeah,
which is like,
section.
We're just getting to the like good stuff finally after meandering for an entire book.
Well, and I feel like the next 4 chapters are also just meandering, honestly.
I think there was, I mean, it's hard because, like, you're not wrong in terms of, like, plot stuff.
Yeah.
But that scene in Perrin's, the horror scene, is so good, I almost don't care.
Fair.
So, like,
We do get some good horror scenes.
We get some good horror scenes. So with Perrin.
Right.
We're
in Amadeusia.
Yes.
Which is on a map somewhere.
Somewhere else.
And he's with the Shanshan and like a representation from all of the troops. He's trying to be dressed up enough to impress people for some plan.
Mm-hmm.
He notices this huge Tinker presence, which we know now.
Yes, which we have been seeing.
Yep.
And reminds him of Aram,
yep.
who is a problem, but he doesn't really know what to do.
Yeah.
Just that he's responsible.
Right. And like Neil, the Ashaman, makes some like derogatory comment about the Tuatha'an, and Perrin like puts him in his place. Balwer is there and has all of Fael's appropriators who he's taken under the wing. And Perrin's like, well, they're actually useful now. So that's
I know. Because
cool.
Balwer wants to. Wait, that's a little early, isn't it? No, he's just, Balwer is like pretending that he's going to see a friend.
Yes.
But mostly because he wants information on the Sanshan in Amadeusia.
Yeah. And we get some notes about like how the whole party got put together and the politicking, like organizing, blah,
which
blah,
like
blah.
Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
This is like just pretty standard stuff that you know,
right,
over explanation a little bit.
Yeah, so let's see. None of this is all that important.
No,
they like finally get to where they're going, which is there are Rakan like handlers. We like get to see sort of the behind the scenes of the Rakan and Tohrakan and whatever the creatures.
Yeah.
Because they're coming to requisition them for their fight with the Shido.
There is a moment where Perrin looks and is like, wow, Matt would be right at home here because it's a bunch of soldiers gambling and all that. And he sees Matt riding off a road into a forest with a line of mounted folk and pack horses. So we know that Matt has left Luca's thing.
Yes. Yep. All right. And then we get a timestamp. It's been 51 days since Fael has been captured.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he like does his Perrin glower and everybody's like, don't worry, we're totally gonna find your wife.
We're gonna do it or avenge her. Like, don't worry, we're doing it.
Yep. So they go to this farmhouse.
And he is Perrin is trying to kit peek, like while he is doing all this, he is trying to pick up on what's going on around him because Balwer has taught him that knowledge is worth having. You never know when you might need to know something. Glad it took you 12 books or 11 books to figure that out, bud.
Yeah. So it's a Shanshan like uniform situation. There's lots of clerks doing writing and things. And General Kurgan is like, I need to talk to whoever's in charge because I need to requisition, you know, Rakan and Tohrakan. In the meantime, somebody in the background is coughing.
It's so good because it's this slow build and you know, I mean, you know something is coming.
Yes.
Because he mentions it and it's like Perrin is like part of the like Perrin knowledge, whatever, is like this is why Perrin is being more paying more attention than usual. And one of the things is like, oh, one of the clerks has this weird dry cough. And then he's like coughing again and he's coughing more. He's like trying to cover his thing, but it's not working. While they're having this conversation to get the Captain
the person
Falloon
who's in charge
or whomever. Yeah. And then right when the guy shows up, oh, it's horrific.
Yeah.
So she's like, Captain Falloon, we need to speak in. And then the guy coughing surges to his feet, vomits out a dark stream. It says vomited a dark stream that hit the floor and broke up into tiny black beetles that went scurrying in every direction. Ugh, so gross, but like so beautifully written about that you can like see every piece of it in your head. And it keeps happening until he sort of like empties out from the inside. And there's just like, it says what remained of the fellow was a pale, flat thing inside his clothes, like a wineskin that had been emptied. The imagery, sir.
It's real.
It is awful.
And so everybody is like freaked the hell out.
But Perrin.
Yeah. Perrin is like, they're just beetles. Like, they're just normal beetles.
My note here on the, they're just borer beetles. You can find them almost anywhere there's old fallen timber. My note is, hey, Perrin, what the fuck?
Yeah. And we're so, he's like, well, it doesn't matter because nothing matters except for a file. And it's, you
like,
know.
Bro.
The guy is like, oh, they didn't come from a log. They came from a human. Like, this is obviously, this is old Hobbes work. And Perrin's like, who cares? You can kill beetles.
In this moment, I was like, you're being annoying. But when he uses that to like keep the other people calm, I was like, okay, it works here.
Yeah.
Does not work here.
But it doesn't feel like he's doing it to keep other people calm.
No,
he's
it's not.
He's doing it because he doesn't care.
Well,
or he's telling himself.
He's telling himself he can't care.
Right.
Right. He's telling himself that the only thing he can focus on is file. But it works when he's doing it externally in a way that it doesn't work internally.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's right. So everybody sort of gets on with their things, although reluctantly. And this is when they start bargaining for, like, okay, she wants 6 Rakan and this and that and the other thing. And the guy's like, that's like all of my forces. You can't have all of those. But I have to see the orders, you know, and so they pull out Suroth's
magic note.
Magic note. And they're like, okay, I guess you can have anything you want.
Anything you want. Here
also,
you
I
go.
happen to have this map that you really need. And Perrin's like, that wasn't tough, Erin, was it?
This is what I texted you.
It
Because he
did.
goes, at first he goes, oh, that's just an accident. Just lucky that he had the mat. Not Taverin work. Even Rand was not Taverin enough to make this happen. And then he sees the map and he's like, oh man, this is a really
This
good
is
map. And then he
definitely
goes,
tough.
could it be Taverin work? No, that was impossible. And I wrote, hey Perrin, can I remind you that you talk to wolves? What is impossible? It's just a lot of like, no, not Taverin.
Taverin, definitely not Taverin. And he's like, oh, make sure they're carts, not wagons, like when you send us the stuff, because you know the gateways aren't big enough for wagons. So they get what they want, they go back out, and everybody's like dealing with the beetles. And all of the Carhian and Antarans who were following file come rushing around Perrin and is like, oh my god, did some guy really vomit beetles until he died? And he's like, shut the fuck up, get back to work.
He's like, this has nothing to do with files,
So
so
we don't
why are you
care.
even thinking about it?
Right. You're like, wow, okay.
And they're like, whoa, you're
Harsh.
right.
Yeah. Way harsh. And then the general is like, all right, well, I guess we have to do the hardest part now. We're gonna see if that paper of yours really works. And apparently they're trying to get Adam.
Yes,
And I was
and
like, I guess that's like, and we knew they wanted four group, but I didn't remember that they wanted Adam
no, not at all, which presumably are for the wise ones,
for
which
the
I
wise ones. Which I
hate.
hate. I know. Thanks. I hate it.
I
I
hate
guess
it.
no, I'm
They're
remembering now when they were bargaining with the Seanchan,
Oh,
they get to
yeah.
collar any Marith domain that aren't with Perrin. So
Yes, which is
that's yes. So,
awful.
yeah.
And then they're walking into town to go see this other person, and again, Hunters for the Horn are mentioned.
Yes.
Because it's like, hey, don't forget this horn exists,
Right.
guys. It's gonna come up again soon.
Yeah, and Mishima is like, oh yeah, like there's such trouble. And I've heard the horn has been found already. Like, what do you think, my lord? And Perrin's
And
like,
Perrin's like, huh?
I there's a lot of rumors.
Sure,
I heard some
possibly.
stuff. I don't know.
There's a moment where people are freaking out about Perrin's eyes
Right.
when
I
they
guess this
notice
is supposed to
them.
be confirmation of it is in the White Tower because Perrin's like, well, I know where it is. It's in the White Tower. I'm not going to tell them though. Like, well, I guess that could be true. I don't know. So yeah, so freaking out the eyes, and everybody's very like, you know, nervous about this next interaction.
Yeah, she's like, Tylee is like, just don't, if you're gonna talk, I mean, don't talk, but if you're gonna
Right.
talk to me. Do not talk to the person directly.
Yeah.
So it's this like they walk in, it's like all this like Forkroot stuff is happening. And this like woman comes out who's like has half her head shaved and is like super proud
Yeah,
and
and she's got insignia on her dress,
yeah, it's
and
like obviously.
she's an operations manager, and I have to respect her game. She's very proud of her productivity,
Fair.
very efficient.
Fair.
And she's like, I'm sorry, you want what? Like,
Yeah. She's like, I can't. No.
no.
No. And then Perrin actually has a good plan and manages to like do the thing. He like cuts in and basically implies that anyone who goes against this is going to piss off Suroth. Like just heavily implying. And he uses Suroth's name, which
Yes.
we find out later that Tylee was like, that was a risk,
Yeah.
but luckily it went the way that we needed it to.
Right. Again, Taverin. So he
But
manages to pull off getting all of the Forkroot in the
all the
world.
Forkroot.
Yeah. And then he
Oof.
gets shot with an arrow.
Well,
Holy
so
shit.
much like Matt,
Yeah.
who just got attacked, now it's Perrin's turn. So he's like, it's a great moment again
Yes.
because Tylee says something about like she's like, oh man, she really bought it. And you said Suroth, and she assumed that meant you guys were like,
Tight.
and Perrin laughs because of the absurdity of it and the final admission that okay, Taverin is a part of this. And then Suroth, or not so, Tylee says, tell me if the question does not offend, did your lady bring powerful connections or perhaps great lands? And it's such a surprise that Perrin turns to look at her, and in that moment, gets shot in the arm, where he might have been shot in the chest.
Fully in the chest.
Had he not turned.
And so there's snipers on a roof.
Yeah.
And everybody crowds around him. They help get the arrow out. The Banner general is like, oh my gosh, this is, I failed you. I should have protected you better. And he's like, not, obviously not. Like, not, everything is fine. I'll just get healed. Like, yeah. It'll be fine.
And she's like, ew, what?
Right, gross.
You're going to let someone use the one power? And he's like, obviously. What, am I just going to bandage it up?
Right. And then we find out from Mishima that the two men on the roof with bows and quivers took poison when they didn't accomplish the killing. So they, like,
but also, they hit the pavement hard, yet there was hardly any blood. Is that a Golem reference also?
Oh, I wonder. Could they have been killed?
Because he says, I think they took poison.
Right.
I think it was the Golem.
Right. That's a good, I didn't catch that. I think you're right. I think the Golem is like,
maybe,
well, wait a minute.
Two golems?
There's not a Golem. I was just going to say there's no Golem following Perrin.
But why, they mentioned the blood with,
yeah,
the
yeah,
blood
you're
is
right.
A thing,
so is there
right?
another Golem or is it the same Golem?
Are there two Golems?
I don't know.
I don't know. I did love this where it's like, yeah. Tylee's like, you have a powerful enemy.
Yeah.
And Perrin's like, there's Mishima, but that's not Mishima. Everyone I have is like far away. And then he's like, but internally, he's like, well, the Forsaken did try it.
Right.
But I don't
right.
want to bring them up.
I'm not going to bring up the Forsaken.
What? Fair, I guess.
Right.
But also, dude.
Yeah. Yep.
Then we're with Elaine. Sorry.
For three
I just,
chapters.
I just
this
don't
is not,
care about the daughter heir stuff.
No, because it's so repetitive and circular.
It's like we get it.
She's under siege. They're mercenaries. Things are not reliable. She's constantly trying to find new troops. And everybody's like being wacky
annoying.
On her because she's pregnant.
And like condescending. And there is a moment with the sea folk that I want to mention.
Yeah.
But like, it's funny because I feel like Elaine is having a Perrin problem.
Yes.
Where he has had to elongate the boring parts because he can't have her doing anything else. And her getting to Caemlyn was like such a huge moment and was like to be queen.
Right.
But he has to create this artificially long process for her not to be queen. But it's so disconnected from everything.
Yeah.
I just don't care.
I know. I'm bored now was my feeling.
Yes.
During this
like
section.
Very much. There's like a siege happening right now. And
right.
We know
there's
like
a fight, but the like, and the writing is fine, but
it's just, fine.
There's no weight to it because it's not personal. Like with Matt and Perrin in fights,
it's personal.
With this,
here,
you know,
it's something we've been seeing. We
yes.
know,
yeah.
we know it's a problem. It doesn't even really feel like an escalation, even though it is.
I don't
like
think
it is.
Yeah. Right.
Like it doesn't
feel like one though.
But it doesn't feel like one because it just feels like another notch in like this very long process.
Right.
So
and
they
we find
managed
out like this is just one of the many assaults.
Yeah.
You know, there's three or four texts coming some days now.
Everyone's really tired.
Right.
She's
had to pull her soldiers back
well,
to the
inner
city.
Well, you know what's so funny? So this all happens and so much like we don't have enough people, which is what has been happening. And then again, like Robert Jordan knows it's a problem. He solves it in the span of like three paragraphs.
Right. They get back to the like grounds. And then there's like suddenly 10,000 more troops coming.
Yeah, it is like it is really wild. It is like you know, she's tired of dealing with mercenaries because she can't trust them. She knows they can be bought. So the kin have been out scouring the lands trying to find people to bring into Caemlyn who are loyalists to Elaine. And so we skipped a lot.
We're skipping a lot, but there's really nothing happens except that like Elaine can't use the power.
We know, which we know.
Which we knew. And Avienda like does some weatherworking.
She does some weatherworking. There's a brief moment where Elaine thinks about Matt and Tom and Oliver and is like, I wish I could help them, but I can't.
Right. Yep.
like Avienda does the
weather
working.
So they take this gateway back to the
Well, there's one yard. Thing about the oh no, the kinswoman is later?
Yeah, it's later.
Okay.
I think.
Right? So the kinswomen, they get back and they see like all of these people coming through the thing, mm-hmm. through the gateway, found by some of the kin. And there's this like extremely handsome man.
Yes. I was like, oh boy, it's a very pointed, like
very pointed. It says light. He was beautiful. Little short of beautiful.
Yeah.
His greenish hazel eyes were talking. I was like, okay, Robert Jordan. It's like a very like teen bop moment. So he has been finding all these people and he comes in with like basically 4,000 men, like almost 5,000 men, mm-hmm. and like all these like minor lords and ladies who want to support Elaine. And mm-hmm. Elaine's like, this is the best.
Yeah, amazing.
Literally, in like a page.
Yeah.
He turns it around for her.
Yes.
It's like, again, oh, right, this has been going on too long. How can right. I fix it quickly?
And that's that whole chapter.
That's
it's
that whole chapter.
Literally, like, here's a battle. Here's Elaine's problems. Now we've solved the problem. Mm-hmm. And Elaine is wet. And then and spends the next two chapters being
complaining
about being wet.
Well, so she comes in to the
palace.
Back into the palace, thinking about how much she understands now more as an adult than she did as a kid, and what it means to actually have glory and what price is paid.
I did almost. There were a couple of, as much as I was like not
there are good quotes.
Into this section, there were good quotes. The quote about glory,
yes.
And paying for things with battle and blood. I was like, oh, that's good too.
I know. Glory was always bought with blood. Glory aside, necessary things were often paid for with battle and blood. It's a good line.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of that. It's her intention to like go straight to her room, but then she sees one of the kin, Rhian Corley, walking with a former
Domine,
and another one of the kin, and it's sort of like, we're reminded that there are Domine who want to continue to be collared because
they've been indoctrinated.
They've been indoctrinated and tortured.
Brainwashed. And,
yeah. But there's been movement with this person, which is exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And then Rhian walks with her to the apartments to like sort of fill her in on some other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Which this was so frustrating, right?
Yeah.
Because she's like, I did like that. There are more reasons to hate the Sunshine than I can count, which is great. But then she finds out that one of the Saldam has admitted to being able to see weaves, being able to channel. And Elaine's like, great, good. And then Rhian's like, okay, then what do we do? And she's like, I'm going to send her back to the Sunshine as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And Rhian is like, well, that's harsh.
Mm-hmm.
But Elaine makes the excellent point of like, no, it fucks with their entire worldview, which is yes. what we want. We want this. And then Rhian accuses her of basically like being too harsh.
Mm-hmm.
And so Elaine is like, am I being too harsh? Is this right. just because I
is
hate that?
Pregnancy hormones?
Is it pregnancy hormones? And I'm like, no,
this is a good plan.
Statescraft.
I mean, it's, you know, she said they cannot keep the Saldam in prison forever. Sending those who did not want to be free back to the Sunshine was a way to be rid of them and strike a blow at the Sunshine at the
yes.
same time. Like, this is the strategic plan. And I felt like it was annoying, especially because we've seen Rand making these kinds of hard decisions and being like, I have to be hard. I have to be cold. I have to be like a rock. Like this
but
is
Elaine.
What it takes. But with Elaine, yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, am I being too mean? Like, is it because I'm pregnant and hormonal? Like,
no.
Like, because I can't tell if Robert Jordan is having
making commentary
that
on that.
On like, oh, like, yeah, exactly. Like, oh, it's when it's a man there. It's like, I mean, the classic double standard, but I don't think so. Direct enough. I feel like I'm doing the lift.
You're doing the lifting. Yes.
And so I just, but it's confusing because we know Elaine is good at statescraft and
yes.
Jordan has shown her to be good at that.
Well, as far as like leadership goes, I think the parallels we see are Egwene and Rand, because Egwene does have those moments of like, I know that I am making hard choices and I know that I have to make hard choices.
Right.
This didn't feel like that. This felt like someone, it's the entire thing is Elaine being like, I'm fine. I'm not doing that. Am I doing
Yeah.
that? Like, it's self-doubt in a way that it's hard because I'm very frustrated by how he's writing her story in wanting to be queen.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so this happens.
Wait, one more thing about this just before we move on.
Yeah.
I do think also it's interesting, I'm making finger quotes here, that the one character who's a POV character that we're with some power that we're getting, who is not reconciled to compromising with the Shanshan, is being portrayed as hormonal.
Yes. Yes.
And emotional.
Because again, Jordan, I think, obviously, I don't know what his plan was. I don't know how he planned out the Shanshan and how he planned out their necessity in the last battle, all of those things. I think he made sort of the problem of writing them as enslavers is a very specific kind of evil.
Yeah.
And like, we know that like the White Cloaks also have a very specific kind of evil within them, but they are separated into like, you have Galad. Galad. You have Galad there, who is presenting like an alternative new kind of White Cloak, who is rejecting some of those other things, those more like
extremist
and liars and whatever sort of thing that is in the ugliness of the White Cloaks. The Shanshan, you have Surath, but she's a dark friend,
That's right.
You have, like, the Shanshan have been presented in a very particular way and never having to reckon internally with the ugliness of their beliefs.
Right. Giannin is the only one we've seen even start do that, and she only has just started.
And only because she was kicked out.
That's right.
Only because she has a personal, I personally have been affected by this, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Not... There's none of, like, with the Aes Sedai and with the White Cloaks, you have characters who question and who push against it and who, you know, are like, these things are bad and these things don't work.
Who see the problems and want to change them.
Exactly, internally. Yes. The Shanshan, none of that.
That's right.
And instead, we're just seeing characters who otherwise do buck up against these bureaucracies and buck up against these organizations, these, like, very flawed organizations. In the position of having to accept it because of circumstance, but they accept it very easily. Right. And so to your point, when we finally have a character who is like,
I think
Elaine a little bit also is a stand-in, because I think part of the reason we're not seeing Egwene deal with this is because he cannot write Egwene as easily accepting a partnership with the Shanshan. He can't do it, right? Elaine is the closest thing we have to that trio, to the original, like, Nynaeve, Elaine, Egwene that we can get. And he can write away her issues with it.
Right.
Because of the position he's put her in. And it's super frustrating.
Yeah. I love that. Okay.
So, all of that to say, woo! Now we're on to Van Dien.
Oh, right. Van Dien, who is just, continues to be, she's trying to solve Adelaus's murder. She's wearing Adelaus's clothes and perfumes. Oof. Like, poor Van Dien.
I know, it's
she's
rough.
She's got these two kin pupils. Oh, no, they're not both kin. One of them, I think, was a... Are they both kin, or is one of
them
they
were
a former
kin.
Domine? I can't remember.
I can't remember, but
anyway,
they're both in
she
novice
has these
white.
Two pupils. Yes.
Yeah, they're both novices.
And they are trying to find out who murdered. And they know they've narrowed it down to like two or three Aes Sedai. One of them has to be Black Aja.
Right. It's Kareen and Sarita or Marilil.
Or Marilil, who has recently fled with a sea folk person. Okay.
So then the Mistress Harfer shows up and is like, there are mercenaries waiting to talk to you.
And Captain Mellor is with them. And so are Kareen Sedai and Saraitha Sedai.
And she's like, okay.
All right. Great.
Cool, I guess.
Cool.
So this is the other point about Elaine. She had the sea folk come up and are extremely rude.
Yep.
Because they're like, you're not doing enough to find Marilil, who obviously kidnapped one of our people, and you're not doing enough, and like, you're a liar, and da da da. Yeah. And Brigitte takes great issue with this, of course, and she's like, stands up and is like, you are forgetting yourself. Like, that is not, you better withdraw your accusation or you'll suffer for it. And Elaine in her head is like, this is not how you handle the sea folk.
Right.
This is not. But in her head, she says, this is no way to go with Windfinders. They were women of power among their own people and accustomed to wielding it. Elaine is the daughter heir of. She's the daughter heir. She is the preeminent political figure right now in this city. Is she not afforded the same level of respect and understanding that she is giving to these people? And that, because it's not just the sea folk who treat her this way. It's everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody condescends to her. Mm-hmm. Everybody speaks rudely to her. Mm-hmm. The kin are rude to her. Other Aes Sedai are rude to her. And I'm like, I want to see her wield that kind of power.
Yeah.
Because they treat her like a little girl. And it's not just the pregnancy. It's in every facet of her interaction with everyone.
Yeah.
That I don't understand. I don't understand the point of it. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand, this line was so glaring to me of like, they are women in positions of power. Like, so are you.
Mm-hmm.
Brigitte is right. They should not be speaking to you like this.
Right. That's right.
So I don't know. I don't get it.
Yeah. Anyway, so the combination of Elaine and Brigitte get Chanel to be like, all right, fine. Well, I'm sending Renail to the Aes Sedai at the Silver Swan, who we still don't know exactly who it is. Nobody knows where their loyalties lie. Like, big question mark there, which is called out here.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, why are they in Aes Sedai when Tar Valon is under siege? Or why are they in Camlann when Tar Valon is under siege? Like, why? Like, what is happening? Nobody knows. Because
Elaine's like, they're obviously probably here to try to take me back. So I will not be engaging with them.
I will not be going over there. Yep. And then we get, you know, some stuff about Seafolk hierarchy, which I don't think is honestly
that
important.
She doesn't, also, she doesn't want the Seafolk to give away the agreement they made. Yeah, yeah, the bargain they made for the bowl. I was like, the Wind of Bowls. The bowl agreement.
The Wind of Bowls.
The Wind of Bowls.
I'm just imagining what a Wind of Bowls would look like.
So they have this interaction, and Elaine does get a moment where she was like, if I'm right, you are going to apologize to me.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's immediately attributed to like Brigitte's anger feeding into her. So whatever, I don't think it counts. But there's this great moment, like after they're done, where the Windfinder looks at Elaine and she's like, you're wet. Like, you should go change. It's not good for you to be wet. And Elaine just literally throws her head back and screams in fury until her lungs hurt, and then it's just dead silent as
except for Avienda like falling over laughing.
Yeah, Avienda's like cracking up, and then everyone's like, okay.
I'll see you later, bye. Oh, and then
very
the
funny.
Last chapter is just like, it's Elaine and Avienda getting dressed, and then the wise ones come in and are like, just kidding, Avienda, like, you have to come back with us.
Yeah,
the only thing that feels like it happens is that we discover Avienda's talent.
Well, so I think, to me, what this chapter is doing is another, again, Robert Jordan being like, I gotta move stuff along.
Yeah.
I just gotta move stuff along. Because Avienda, and I think someone in the Discord said it, of like, I've missed Avienda, like, being a
having
character.
A purpose. Yeah.
And having a purpose. And I think this is that. It's Robert Jordan being like, I can't have Avienda just sitting in Camlann while Elaine does everything. Because she doesn't really have a purpose here other than to be Elaine's sister.
Yep.
So Elaine comes in. Yeah, there's not too much to say in terms of like, these first several pages are just like, I need to get dressed. I need to do the thing. Da 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 da. You know, talking about the guardswomen. They agree that they need to overawe the mercenaries, so they need to dress a certain way. She's mad about Rand getting her pregnant. Like, whatever.
Right.
So then Avienda pulls out this Tarangreal she has, which is a dagger. And because Elaine's like, why are you, what is this? Like, what are you talking about with this dagger? She's like, I think that you should hold on to this. And she goes, I think that if you have this in your possession, the shadow cannot see you, not the eyeless or the shadow twisted, maybe not even leaf blighter, except that I must be wrong if you did not see it. Because Avienda's like, if you didn't see this and you know everything about Tyrion Greal. And Elaine's like, oh, shit. Right. Does Avienda have a talent?
Right, right. So she takes her to this pile of Tarangreal she's had in her, because she can't use the power, and so she can't investigate them. So she's just like kind of looking at them and like thinking about them until she can get back to being Science Elaine, which we love. And they figure out that, yes, Avienda can tell what Tarangreal are for.
Yeah, it's really fun because she's like, I think this one does this. And as they're going along, she gets more confident and she stops like asking
and starts telling. Yeah.
And so finally she's like, I think this one has like books inside of it.
Right.
And she channels and like fiction and nonfiction essentially come up over the guy's head.
I love that. There's lies and truth. The two words might be translated, or maybe fiction and not fiction. I was like, this is
so
like,
good.
It's an ebook library.
Yes. It's awesome.
There's an MP3 player in there,
it's
too.
It's so good. Yeah, there's an MP3 player. It's like all like, yeah, it's all modern, like things that we need. And so Elaine's like, okay, I think this is proof that you can do this.
This
and
is
that's
amazing.
And Avienda is so excited. And she's like, oh my God, maybe I can start studying these with your guidance and we can figure it out. And then the wise ones come in and is like, you're not going to have time for that, man.
Nope. We're
sorry.
Coming with us.
You're coming with us.
Do your training again.
And it is this like really sad moment because they're like, you are not allowed to stay here. You have to go train.
Well, and the clans are leaving.
And they're leaving.
And, because Rand is sending them somewhere.
Is it really Rand? Or is it, because they just said a black coat came tell us.
Well, wasn't there a letter? There was a letter.
There was a letter. But did Rand write it? I don't know. I might be thinking too hard about everything going on with
the Ashaman. He sent a messenger,
one
of the Black Cloaks, with a letter for Bale. Yes. No, I feel like we saw Rand write letters and send them
out.
Oh,
yeah. You're right.
And we were
what are the
letters? And we still don't know. So this was one of those letters.
Yes.
And then everybody loses their minds about Elaine not having a midwife. And like that's
which is so weird.
The rest of the chapter.
Well, because Elaine is like, can you just tell me what it said? Yeah. I'm sure Rand would want me to know. And they're like, well, actually, the letter said not to tell anybody.
Right.
So we can't. So we don't know where they're going.
Yeah.
We just know that they're going.
And oh, right. Elaine does give Avienda to Angreal. Or, well, she gives her an Angreal and a Tarangreal. She gives her a turtle Angreal and then the stone dream ring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's like, just keep them with you and use them as you need to. And Avienda gives her the dagger to keep her out of sight from the Dark One.
From Old Hob.
Maybe they should give that to
Or
Rand.
Shadow Spawn.
I don't know.
I know, seriously.
Maybe, I don't know. And they have this like wonderful moment where they're like, I'm gonna miss you. You were like so important, and you know, it's sad.
Yeah.
And then that's it. It's at the end, it's like he's like, I am curious to see how this moves forward with Elaine not having Avienda. Because it's her sister was gone, yet she had a city to defend and a throne to gain. Duty would have to sustain her now. I'm not hopeful, but I would like to see a change.
I mean, there's a bunch of stuff that has to happen with Elaine, right? She has to win the battle, presumably, against the opposing forces.
Yes.
She has to have the babies. We have to deal with Malar, who we know is a dark friend just waiting to, like, you know, mess her up or kill her or, you know, abuse her. Like, there's all kinds, there's these threats hanging over her. And, you know, she keeps saying nobody can harm me because we know the babies are going to be born healthy because Min had a viewing.
Yeah.
We don't know what happens after that. So, like, what I guess we don't know is whether or not Robert Jordan is going to, like, fast forward her stuff so we actually get to the action.
I hope so.
Hopefully.
I really hope so. I cannot sit in this, like,
no
purgatory of Elaine not being queen and trying to fight this random person I do not care about.
No, I know. It's rough.
But right. Good stuff in these chapters.
Yeah,
I think.
Some good moments.
Lots of good moments.
Yeah.
You know. Excited. Lots of, you know what it was? It's like lots of good moments that had me being like, I want to turn the page. I want to, like, I feel like there's actually momentum again in a way. Like Matt leaving the circus is very exciting.
I guess my problem with it was like, none of this was the actual momentum. It was the building up to change.
But there was, right, but it is change. I mean, not so much with Perrin.
No, I was just going to say, and Perrin is still in like a no man's
land.
Yeah,
not so much. But like Matt's story, I think right now is extremely compelling and extremely like actual movement happening.
I am very glad they finally left the circus.
For real.
That felt like purgatory.
Yes. No, it was time. And I think he did it in a way that wasn't just like, we're going to have a conversation about leaving. Right. It was like, there's actually impetus for the right. for them to leave. And there was like action on the page again. Mm-hmm. And just like, it felt like the writing was fun again.
Yeah.
Bits where it hadn't been in a long time.
Yeah.
There was just a lot of like, even with the Perrin stuff, as much as I'm like, there wasn't a ton of plot stuff, it was still exciting to read. Mm. Like, it was still like fun to read and fun to see Perrin like having to think on his feet and try to get past this person or like the Beatles or like whatever it was. It was still fun, you know, in a way that like very easily could have just been stodgy and boring.
Mm. No, I agree. The writing is better. I just am in the place where I'm like, if you're not giving me more plot, I'm bored. I'm just like,
fair.
The writing can be better and I can still be bored.
Fair.
That's where I'm at.
I'm not bored. I am actually having a good time reading it, except for when it's like that one chapter with Elaine was rough.
Yeah.
That was rough. Because even then, even after the like, the chapter with Elaine where they're or with Avienda where they're just like getting dressed, I still was like, oh my god, Avienda's leaving, and like this is like, there's still a lot of emotions there, so it still read pretty well to me.
Yeah,
but we'll see what comes next.
We will So yeah, keep an eye out for episodes every other Wednesday ish next episode we're discussing Knife of Dreams chapters 16 through 22.
I am curious to see what happens now that we are recording these episodes in quick succession.
Oh,
so right. So it's not going to be 2 weeks between our reading. And I'm curious to see how that's going to change anything. And if it does, because that is one thing where I'm like, we do 2 weeks between, which is not usually how people read.
Right.
So yeah, I'm curious about it.
Yeah, I guess we'll see.
We'll see. A big thank you to Brian Dunn, our fellow Wheel of Time fan and musician who created the amazing intro and outro tracks for this podcast. You can find more of his work at briandunnmusic.net. That's Brian with a Y and Dunn with two N's.
And if you are enjoying the show, pretty please leave us a review and or rating on the podcast platform of your choice. It helps other folks to find the show. We super appreciate it. You can also find us on social media. Where am I? I'm on Instagram as I am Jen IRL, JennIRL. I'm on Blue Sky, Tumblr, and Litzy as Jen IRL.
I am on mostly Blue Sky and Instagram these days at Run With Skizzers. And also, you can pre-order some things that I have coming out. Oh, a few things. Okay, so Marvel Unlimited, if you have a Marvel Unlimited subscription, I have 6 issues, a 6-week run on Spider-Man Unlimited, and I really put him through the paces, and it's super fun, and it starts on April 2nd. Then I have a Jubilee one-shot coming out in June, which I'm pretty sure you can pre-order from your local comic book shop now. And, of course, my YA novel, Biomatha's Romance Revenge Plot, comes out in September and is available for pre-order, and will hopefully I'll be able to share the cover with everyone soon because it's so good.
It's so,
so
good.
I know, I sent it to Jen.
I saw 3 different versions. You know, it's which is the fun part of like behind the scenes is like which one. And I'm so excited for the final cover.
It's so cute. Yes, yeah. I'm very, very excited about it. In the meantime, you can also find us on Patreon, patreon.com/tarvelinorbust. A huge thank you, as always, to our patrons. Shakib K, Marlowe's S, Zane S, James B, Caitlin E, Brandon G,
Noisy Caribou, Raymond H, Josh M, Cisnerd, Holly H, Abby H, Tracy P, Rachel H, Ian M,
Volahir, Matt Dave, Simon K, Pevin, Gretchen W, Clista R, Catherine, Support Your Local Library, Asmodian's Moody Harp Playing.
Leah B. Molly B. Siddhant N. T. Jennifer P. Anastasia L. Jessica D.
Laura M. Spencer Jarvis Jonathan Bruce L. Benjamin A. The Bitter Fig Nate M. Joanna S. James C.
Druidess Cleodna Stevani Johanna R. Christina M. Lizzie R. Kate G. Ariel Holly B. Elizabeth M. Ryan M. Zach H. Eleanor Justin H. Fred Robin Lisa D.
Jordan Z. Saga N. Josh S.
Robert J. Ben P. G. Todd P. Footy Ross P. Tobin T. Megan David N. Ariel B. Michael Linnea M. Lindsay W. Julie Danielle G. Dan B. John A. Clara H.
Carly Brendan O. Mary Caroline P. Joe E. James K. Joseph S. Ryan M. Sarah R. Helen D. Joshua M. Michael D. M. Letham. Janae H. Jennifer P.
Christina G. Chaitali S. Charlie E. Arcade. Stephen S. James. Ruth A. Jetlag Jessica. Mandarb the girl, not the horse. David U. Meridim. Mimi K. Amanda. Heather J. Christina M.
Sirius G. Olivia K. Joshua S. Nicholas E. Michelle S. Michelle D. Destination Toast. MJ. Kat S. Thomas K. Elizabeth F. Emily. Evans K. Ola J. Yulia S. Brian D. This episode is not the ending. There are neither beginnings nor endings to the Wheel of Time, but it is an ending.
Bye!
We did it.